Ron and Anian.
When they want you to stop driving your gasoline car, they'll get you to do it. They'll either do it by eliminating gasoline and they'll trickle it down or make it so expensive you won't be able to afford to drive it, or they'll do it by parts.
Rolling down the road at 8 miles.
The car doctor.
The battery's got to be tip-top. The battery's got to be 100%, which it really needs to anyway, but start-stop just requires that much more because it's more of a strain on the electrical system.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the car doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
You know, before we get today's show started, as Johnny Carson would reach over and talk to Ed McMahon, Tom, are you there? Tom, I have an announcement for you.
Lovely.
You ready? Guess what I'm doing next week? I haven't told you this yet.
Can we say that on the air?
Yeah, I think we can.
Okay.
So I'm giving away a Nissan.
Excellent.
Did you know that? I think did I tell you this? We're giving away a Nissan.
Matter of fact, I think I posted it on our Facebook page.
Okay, good. Yeah, we're actually giving away a book about Nissan, 50 Years of Exhilarating Performance by Pete Evanow. It's a great book, color pictures. It is such a high-quality book. I've enjoyed it for the little that I've read it because I'm trying not to get my fingerprints all over it. And I know I have to give it away because otherwise I'll have a collection of books and my wife's going to come in and hit me in the head with it. Like, what are you collecting all this stuff for? You know, it's like got to move on. But it covers everything, the history of early when it was Datsun. And then it became Nissan, and they talk about the history of the Z car, and it's fascinating. It really is how it all came to be. So we're going to give that away next week, Tom. Decision of the judge, namely you, will be final.
Oh, love that.
Yeah, so everybody's got a clamor all over you. And
So wait a minute. Are there any pictures of you in this book?
No, not at all. So it's a good book
to
have.
Perfect.
Yeah,
perfect. It's a good prize then. Hey,
the face made for radio. it's why would I do that to anybody? Actually, Tom, I'm a very famous person. Did you know that? I had a couple of people tell me that this week. It was really kind of funny. I had somebody from a local New York radio station call me up. They want to put the show on in the New York market, in the New York metro. And I had to explain a bunch of things to them, and they were very polite, and they thanked me. And they said, you know, you're very famous. I'm really glad you gave me 10 minutes. I can't believe. I'm like, really?
Huh.
I mean, she said, you're famous like Kim Kardashian, and that kind of killed the mood.
I bet.
I was like, geez, I don't want to be famous like that. So
I know. Good Lord.
You know, but in any event. So next weekend here on The Car Doctor, we're giving away a Nissan book. I'll have to say it like that so we're not giving away a Nissan. What do you got for me this hour? Look, we got calls.
We got calls.
Be popular.
People actually want to talk to you. I find that amazing.
Yeah, well, because I'm famous. So I'm right up there with Kim. Let's go over to Frank in Delaware, 16 Silverado, see what's going on. Frank, is this truck broken again?
Well, no. How you doing, Ron?
Good, sir.
I went ahead and took it in last week on the torque converter.
Okay.
And they followed the bulletin you told me, the service bulletin, 20NA142.
Right.
So they went ahead and did the procedures on that tech bulletin, and I've only been driving it a couple days. I think I can still feel it. It's just when you let off of the accelerator, it really doesn't matter what speed you're going. I mean, generally over 30. But they told me they found no metal shavings in the pan. So they changed the transmission fluid and cleaned everything up and the filter and so forth, gasket and all. But I don't know if – is that possible not to have – it's got 29,400 and some miles on it, 29,400.
It's possible. Did they – refresh my memory, Frank. Did they put a torque converter in this vehicle?
No. The first time – I took it in December. I paid for the transmission flush.
Right.
And then this time it's under the warranty. And they had a kit or something. I didn't get a full detail on what was done. but they told me they didn't find any metal shavings and so forth. What's the outlook on that, do you think, from your professional opinion?
You know, it's funny because Tuesday this past week, I was working on a Silverado at the shop, and I thought of you. I don't know if you heard me thinking about you. Because I came across preliminary information package PIP 5337B as in Baker, which replaces PIP 5337A as in Apple. And it talks about shutter or shake on acceleration, excessive fluctuating between 30 and 65 miles an hour. And I said, I think somebody from the radio show called me up about this from Delaware. I said, I think it was Frank. And sure enough, so go get your hands on PIP 5337B, but I'll tell you the end result is they want you to put a torque converter in the vehicle.
Say that again, Ron, before you go slower.
Okay, PIP, preliminary information package, or preliminary information piece, 5337B as in Baker. It's not a bulletin, it's a PIP. It sure is. Only GM could come up with a piece of information that would be a PIP, which is a precursor to a TSB. You know, it's like, what was the repair? Oh, it was a PIP, okay. I bet. So PIP 5337B, and it talks about shutter on acceleration. Do you have these symptoms, Frank?
Yep.
Shake or shutter during light acceleration between 30 and 65, excessive RPM fluctuation, like the tack needles moving, a shutter feeling like driving over rumble strips?
Yeah, but it's only on deceleration.
Okay. Well,
it's only when I let off the accelerator to slow down or catch a light or you know, just slowing down, I will feel it.
Well, if you're feeling it only on decel, that's not in the trans. That's a separate issue. Are they feeling this shutter shake?
Well, they went ahead and performed this. I didn't talk to the technician that worked on it. I imagine I should do that next week, try to hook up with the person that worked on it and ask them some questions.
Right, because if they're not feeling it, they're chasing something. They're not quite sure what it is. I had a Toyota this week, and then I got to go. I had a Toyota Avalon this week. Customer brought it in. All that I got on my work order was a jingling noise from the rear of the vehicle. That was it. Jingling, clanking noise, rear of vehicle. And I was the guy that wrote the order. So I had to think back. I had to think back to the customer. I thought about it. I came to the conclusion. I said, gee, you know, I would focus more on the loud tearing sound I'm hearing from the right front, like the strut's ready to fall out. Sure enough, the top right front strut mount, the nut was loose. I snugged it up, told him to come pick up the car, drive it. He came, went around the block, and he goes, wow, it's fixed. What'd you do? When I told him, so, you know, communication's important. Before we go any further and talk about any more PIPs and TSBs and anything else, Frank, go back to the tech. Talk to him. Explain to him what it is you're chasing, what it is your concern is. Maybe somehow in the era of pandemic, you'll have to take a ride with him, and then we can have a conversation afterwards depending upon what he finds. I appreciate the call. Gary in PA, what's on your mind? Comment about electric vehicles. Always open
Hello,
to those
sir.
Conversations.
How are you?
Good, sir. What's going on?
Well, you were talking, I was listening to your show. I don't have a specific vehicle, but I was listening to your show, and you were talking about, you know, what are they going to do about gasoline for electric vehicles? And my comment is, gasoline is just a very small part of the petroleum industry. I mean, it's a significant part, but it's not the petroleum industry. And we've been a petroleum-based society for more than 100 years. And everything is made with petroleum. Gasoline is made, obviously, but steel and glass and rubber and asphalt and the material for the seats, everything is petroleum-based. Everything.
Fair point.
And, I mean, I read somewhere that it is physically impossible for an adult in this day and age to go through a day without touching something that's made from petroleum.
But here's my question. Well, if the electric car becomes so mainstream, and keep in mind, 3% of the fleet right now is hybrid in 20 years. In the 20 years of hybrids, 3% is hybrid. If in 15 years we go mainstream electric, not that they'll eliminate gasoline, but, you know, the gasoline station on the corner where we go to get gas doesn't get asphalt, steel, glass. You know, they're there to sell gas. How are they going to dispense gasoline to us and justify the expense?
Well, that's right. They can't. They can't do that. But the ones who are trying to do this are saying that they want to get rid of fossil fuels.
Right.
Cannot that in this society the way it is right now? It can't happen.
You know what I?
Everything is made of gas.
You know what
Everything is made of petroleum.
You know what I want to see, Gary? I'm waiting for the day when there's a storm. All right, I'll lay it out here, and then we'll go to break. When there's a storm, and we lose power, and a senator goes out to cut down a tree that fell in his driveway, and he's got an electric train saw because he doesn't want to use gasoline and he realizes there's no electricity. How do you cut the tree down in the storm that just took out the electricity?
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, there was a cartoon online where they had a guy sitting at a charging station with his electric car, and they showed the charging station, and then the wires going to a big generator that's diesel powered.
Right. Right. Yeah.
It makes zero sense. Zero.
Do you ever notice, you know, and you and I sound like we're in that same age group. Over my lifetime, I've noticed there's usually these excessive swings all the way to the right, all the way to the left. And I'm not referencing political parties. I'm just, you know, first it goes to the right, then it goes to the left. And all they're trying to do is get to the middle. Right?
Yeah. I see it all the time. Well, I'm probably older than you, but I've seen it throughout my lifetime. When I was young, when I was in my 20s, I was turning wrenches then. Okay, I lived in Los Angeles, and I was turning wrenches, and I built a couple of hot rods and stuff like that. Now I don't even look under the hood of my car.
Right,
I'm afraid to because I don't even know what's in there. But this is back when cars had points. You know, I could work on cars when you could listen to a car and figure out what was wrong with it.
I bet you got some late night Friday night stories cruising the boulevard.
Oh yeah. the point I'm trying to make is that when they say that they want to get rid of fossil fuels, it's not realistic. They can't.
Right.
A society that's petroleum based society that's been that way for 100 years, you can't just change it with the swipe of a pen. You can't do that.
So it makes you wonder what's really the end game, and you wonder how they're going to get there. Gary, I appreciate the call, but I'm going to put it back on you. I want you to call back again. I want to hear some late-night cruising stories coming out of the garage on a Friday night in downtown Los Angeles 40 years ago. I bet you got some good ones, brother. 855-560-9900. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, coming back to rock right after this.
Write it on the wall so you don't forget to call for car advice done right. 855-560-9900. Now, back to Ron.
Let's get down Virginia way, talk to Tanya about her 14 Cadillac. Tanya, Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor at your service. How can I help?
Hey, Ron, thank you so much for taking my call
today.
Welcome. Love
You're
your
welcome.
Show. Love
thank
your
you.
Bumper music, too.
Thank
so,
you.
Quick question.
Sure.
In March, during COVID, my car, the touchscreen, I have a Cadillac. Not a CTS, an SRV, the CRX kind.
SRX?
And, yeah.
Okay.
And it's a 2014, has just over 67,000 miles on it. And the touch screen cracked in the left side and the right side. Just all started, you know, last March. And I no longer can touch the screen to do anything.
Okay.
And it really, it would not have bothered me so much, you know, because not a real tech savvy person. The touch screen was fine, except when I called the dealership to see what's going on with it. They said, well, it would be $1,200 to replace it. And they really only have the same replacement of the same product that is in there currently. And then he told me there is a class action lawsuit on that. And so I wondered, well, do I go ahead and bite the bullet to have it replaced? Do I just kind of wait? And it would not have bothered me so much, except for this Christmas we got new phones. And here in Virginia, you can't be on your cell phone and driving.
Right, so you can't pair.
I don't have a way.
Yeah, you can't pair the phone.
I can't pair it. That's right.
Yeah.
All right. So any insight would be great.
So, and I've gotten, you know, it's actually, I've gotten this as a common complaint at the shop, and then emails, a lot of people have reached out. And what I've done in my research, what I found is there's a company out there called Provo Beast. If you go to YouTube and search Cadillac SRX screen replacement.
Okay.
All right. And there's a couple of videos that come up, and one of them is by a company called Provo Beast. I've never used their product. In the video, they talk about how they're using a GM replacement part. I don't know if it necessarily helps you, but it will show you just what is going to be done. And it's kind of fascinating to watch as they pull that center unit out of the dash and then take it apart and spread the screws out all across the workbench down to the point where they can change the screen. It's just amazing what goes into it. So that being said, perhaps your mechanic is a brave soul if it's somebody other than the dealer. He's not adventurous.
He said no.
Yeah. You know, and then the other side of it is, at least then you'll have knowledge of what it is they're going to do. You know, the other side of it is, if you get a straight replacement part, because that $1,200 is likely to replace the screen, and you should ask them that, because I don't think that's the whole unit. The whole unit itself, if I were to guess, is more than $1,200. It's probably $3,000, because it's actually a computer made up of several modules. All right. So, you know, ask them specifically, what are you changing? Are you just changing the screen, or are you just changing, the whole cluster? All right.
Okay.
If you watch some of the YouTube videos, you'll get more information. You'll have more knowledge to see how the system breaks down. You know, I kind of like doing that stuff because I realize that, you know, you think the center of that dashboard is so structurally sound, and you realize it's just a bunch of modules screwed together that make it, and they make it look like that. You know, it's. I often think about what Carpenter Bob used to say to me: if you knew how a house was built, you wouldn't live in one. And I keep telling him, if you knew how a car was put together, you wouldn't drive it. So that being said, go back and ask the dealer. If I have you guys do it for $1,200. You know, what can you do for me, since there is this class action lawsuit, since it is such a common failure? Is there any wiggle room here to make me a happy GM vehicle owner?
Yeah, and so when I asked the dealership, what they had mentioned is, you know, once the class action lawsuit is settled, then it's likely they would reimburse, I guess, up to some point, depending on what the decision is in the class action lawsuit.
Right.
But that doesn't really kind of help me at the moment, you know.
Who services the car, Tanya?
The dealer? I use an, I don't know if I can say who my mechanic is, but he's at Napa Auto Repair.
Yeah, you can tell us who your mechanic is. It doesn't matter to me.
Okay. And it's just too big of a job, you know, and intricate that he doesn't really want to deal with, you know. So I was just curious, other than the dealership. So thank you.
I'll leave you with this real quick. If this is your first Cadillac, or if this is, you know, your second or third GM vehicle, I think the dealership, if they were smart, would pay attention. And if you said, hey, I'm a multiple GM vehicle owner, what can you do for me? Do that and let us know what the outcome is. I wish you all luck. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. I'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, here at 855-560-9900. Let's get over to Ralph in Virginia, 64 Cadillac convertible. Ralph, how can I help?
Yes, sir. Hey, first of all, I just want to say I enjoy your show. I'm amazed at how much you know, and I'm thoroughly impressed. So thank you for taking the call.
Well, you're welcome.
So, yeah, his dream car, right? 64 Cadillac convertible. And he moved, and when he moved, he didn't have a place to keep it, so he had a cover on it sitting out underneath some pine trees. Well, he just got a place to to pull it under some shelter, and when he pulled the cover off, the underside of the white convertible roof was molded.
Yeah.
Anything you can do for that?
Well, you know, the problem is, and just turn your radio down in the background there, Ralph, if you would. The problem is,
okay,
to get rid of mold, if it was on the floor or, you know, a concrete area, or wood in the house, you know, you would use, you know, a typical household cleaner, Lysol, Clorox, vinegar, something like that. The issue is, obviously, you put Clorox on a cloth fabric or, you know, anything with color, it's gonna take the color out. Clorox bleach is going to, you know, bleach it to a neutral. So whatever we put on this convertible top, we've got to make sure that it's not going to hurt the top. You know, that's the concern. There's a lot of ways to kill mold. It's just I don't want to ruin the top on the 64 Cadillac. So, you know, my first thought is wash it thoroughly, warm water and a good car wash soap. The question is, will that get down into and remove, you know, the mold pores down in the fabric of the material? So, you know, what I'm thinking is, and this is going to be a little bit of an experiment, is if we added vinegar, because I don't see vinegar taking color out of the top, and I would try this on a small area, a small corner of the top first to see, you know, maybe a spot where it's not necessarily exposed to the naked eye, where we're not going to, you know, see it every day, just to make sure there's no reaction. Wash that area first. If everything looks good and it just gets clean, then I'd feel comfortable telling you to wash the top with some vinegar mixed in with a good car quality car soap. And, you know, we should talk about washing the car, and this is probably you get it and a lot of other people get it, but just in case, you don't use dishwash detergent to wash a car. You know, I we've never really talked about that here on the show, at least not in recent memory, because of the fact that...
Why is that?
Well, dishwash detergent is very harsh. You know, it will actually strip away any wax that's on the vehicle. It can actually do damage to the paint. It's probably the worst thing in the world you can use to wash a car. Companies like Meguiar's, 3M, all the different sorts of car wash soaps that are out on the marketplace, they're soft on the paint, they're easy on the paint, but they help lift and remove the dirt. And that's what you want to use. You want to use something designed specifically to wash a car. And I say this only because, you know, every once in a while somebody says, hey, you know, I'm not spending $15 on car wash soap. I'm just going to use my mom's dishwash detergent for $6 a bottle. And I cringe because, you know, it's for the $10 you're trying to save, you're ruining the paint job on the car.
Right. You know. Well, now you triggered another thing. What about this new synthetic wax or something I saw out? I hadn't tried it. You know anything? I don't even know what it's called offhand. Do you?
Are you talking about synthetic wax for the paint? Right.
I don't know. It's right next to Meguiar's and.
Are you talking about the? Is it F12 or F2? There's all sorts of waxes on the market. It would be an easier conversation to say, Ron, what do you wax the hot rod with? All right. Black always gets one coat of Meguiar's. I believe it's Meguiar's 28. Their yellow paste in the tan bottle works really well. Fills all the scratches. And then once a year, I'll go through the three-step polish. Or actually, I use the last two steps of the three-step polish. And then I'll coat it with some Meguiar's wax. And I'll do Meguiar's wax in the middle of the cruise season and then once before I put it away. And that's all I ever really use. I like the Meguiar's product. It works well.
If it's my daily vehicle? I just want to drive back and forth to work or wherever, to the woods. And
Get yourself, and listen, you can go on the Meguiar's website. You know, it's funny, and I like Meguiar's product. You can go on the Meguiar's website, tell them your vehicle, tell them how you're going to use it every day, show car, you know, hauling manure, whatever you want to do for it, all right? You know, they've got all the gamuts covered, and they will tell you, they will write you a prescription, per se, of you need this cleaner, this wax, this polish, this car wash soap, and they'll tailor it right to you. I have Meguiar's 27 or 28, I forget the number, wax for the hot rod. I've got their cleaner wax and their regular wax in the red bottle for the Suburban. And that's what I use on pretty much everything else. And I also use their, I can't think of the name of it. I can see it. It's in a, It's in a gray and black bottle from Meguiar's to keep the headlights protected too, because I also wax the headlights. So whole different conversation. We'll have to talk about wax and cleaners one day. So does that do it for you, Ralph? Does that help?
Hey, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Enjoy the show.
You're very welcome, sir. Good luck to you. Let us know what happens. Let's get on over and talk to Jesse in Virginia. Gee, Virginia's coming in loud and strong today, three in a row. 12 GMC Sierra and some problems with the alternator and the Stabilitrack light. Jesse, you're on. How can I help?
Yeah, hey, Ron. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Well, I have an alternating problem where I get the chime go off and yellow light says traction control. The other one says service Stabilitrack. And they'll come on either simultaneously or they'll alternate. And it doesn't happen all the time. And usually this happens like in the summertime when it's hot and humid. And when cooler weather, it never happens. So I had a couple of different people look at it, and nobody could seem to nail it down. And I was wondering if you could give me some kind of direction on this.
Does it ever display a fault code anytime anybody scans it?
I don't know. I don't have that answer.
Does it, you know, have you taken it in when the light is displayed?
Well, I've given them the truck, and I know it comes on, you know, when they got it. Maybe if you turn it on, after a few minutes, it will come on.
Okay. So let's talk about this, all right? You've got a vehicle with 30 computers on it, believe it or not, all right? And every computer talks to every other computer. That's what a controlled area network is, CAN bus, all right? So this could be an issue where one module is dropping off the bus and can't talk to the other. This could be a fault with that actual module for Stabilitrack. This could be a fault with a sensor that feeds information to the Stabilitrack module. All right? That's why it would really be important to catch this in the act to see, you know, who's lost. Does it have a U code, communication? Does it have a P code, sensor fault? Does it have a circuit performance code? I can tell you this, they have lots of issues with the steering wheel position sensor and the connector itself, all right? And that will cause the description you're describing with service Stabilitrack and traction control. An ABS fault will cause a traction control issue.
All right.
You know, we've got to find out who's not talking. That's the first step.
Okay.
All right. Now,
all right.
Any aftermarket wiring or installs to this vehicle, anything done in or around the area of the steering column? Is there a plow on this truck?
I don't know if any aftermarket work has been done on this. I've had the truck. I bought it last spring.
Okay.
And then I had the problem all in the summertime, towards the late summer when it was hot and humid.
Right.
But as the weather cooled down, it stopped doing it. But as the weather's going to start warming up, I'm positive it's going to start doing it again.
Right. And I'm thinking that if it's heat-related, I'm either dealing with water intrusion somewhere that's caused corrosion and it's affecting resistance, or I'm dealing with a module that's obviously getting hot for some reason or warm. But, you know, your description of weather just makes me automatically think that this is a weather-related, temperature-related issue, and I've got to think about how electronics react to that. So do this, okay? Crawl around under the dash. Does it look like anything's out of place? A panel missing? Any screws missing where they're supposed to hold up a shield? Any place it looks like somebody was there before you or somebody was there since the factory tech assembled it back in 12? And if it does, take a little bit of a harder look. Take a look at the connector for the steering wheel position sensor, which is located in and around the column area. It's attached to the column. And then the next time it happens, talk to your mechanic and say, listen, when I bring this in, I want you to at least do a complete data scan of all the modules on the vehicle, not OBD2, year, make, model specific, because we want to see, first of all, is somebody not talking? Even though it's a momentary thing, it should record a U-code communication fault for that particular problem. Good luck. Let me know what happens. 855-560-9900. Car Doctor's coming back right after this. Welcome back. We're on the name of the Car Doctor. Let's get over to Pete, 06 Chrysler PT Cruiser. Peter, how can I help?
Hello, Ron.
Yes, sir.
How you doing today?
Good. What's going on?
Okay, 2006 PT Cruiser, 107,000 miles. I've spoken to you before about this problem.
Just wait for it.
Two years ago.
How many miles on this car? 107,000?
107.
Yeah, just broken in, brother. Go ahead.
The PT Cruiser, hardly. That's another story.
Yeah.
The transmission I'm getting, it's going into limp mode off and on intermittently.
Okay.
And I own a Launch 123E scanner, and I'm pulling a PO562, which is a low voltage, a PO750 from the TCM, and then from the PCM I'm getting a 700, and the PO441, which is an EVAP thing, which anyway.
Has nothing to do with this. What did you say? You were getting a P0562?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and what have you done so far to diagnose this?
Well, what I have done is I had mounted a ground on the side of the transmission, on the left-hand side, because it was easy, a nice big battery ground cable from a lawn tractor, actually, but it worked fine, and I thought it was getting corroded with the cold weather. This has happened before. I had a sharp shut off the check engine light, cleared all the codes, and it's been fine up until about 3 weeks ago.
Okay.
And it's been a great car. My wife and I have been taking trips with it, et cetera. But 3 weeks ago, it started hunting back and forth and trying to go into limp mode. And the the prandial and the tachometer would light up, saying, you know, signaling that something is amiss.
Right, that it's going into limp.
Exactly.
Okay.
But you can clear the codes, drive a few miles, and it'll come back.
All right. So my first question is, do all of these fault codes come at once, or are they spread out over time?
They all come at once.
They all come at once. So we've got to look for what's common. All right? We've got to look
One thing I did do is I took the battery out and the air cleaner, and I mounted, there's a threaded boss on the top of the transaxle, and I actually tapped it for a quarter 20 and mounted that ground strap right there, a good solid ground, and tied it to the negative post side of the battery.
Okay.
Cleaned everything up with a wire brush, you know, just to make sure it was good and grounded.
Have you done anything with the trans relay?
I have not.
Okay. So, you know, what if we found the trans relay, all right?
Was that the shift solenoid in the front of the transmission?
No, this is going to be the actual power power relay that actually feeds power to the controller itself.
Okay.
And I'd like to see, you know, is this setting the 562 and then the associated related voltage codes that are going with it because it's just losing power.
Yeah.
And if we could find power input either to the relay or to the control module that's on the front of the trans or the TIPM, depending upon which version of wiring this is for a Chrysler. All right. If we could find the power input and wire in a 194 side marker bulb. You listen to the show long enough, I can tell. You know
in
what?
Series?
In series, and just so basically it'll light up the bulb. And is the bulb lit? And you know, do we have power where we're supposed to have power? Just something simple.
Is there anything I can do with that relay as far as changing it, replacing it, cleaning something up?
Depending upon what version this is, that relay might be replaceable. But I would start looking for that. I would definitely go there.
Where might that relay be?
That relay is, if it's going to be where I think it is, isn't there a battery box under the hood?
There sure is.
Junction box. I think we're going to start there. But before you do anything, what I would say to do is get a wiring diagram and match it to the vehicle, and then look at the components listed, and then follow the wires and find your power source that wakes everything up here, because Chrysler has been known to, I've had Chryslers that are 06s that have 05 wiring in them. So match what you've got to a diagram, and then we'll talk again. 855-560-9900. I'm Ron and Ian, the Car Doctor. I'll be back right after this.
Here I come in my 57. Some engine.
Welcome back. Ron Anand, the Car Doctor. Let's take a look at the Car Doctor Facebook page. Rick writes in, hey, Ron, I've got a 2003 Windstar, 87,000 miles on it. The trans is beginning to slip when it's first leaving home. No other time. Everything else is good. Do you think it's worth replacing? You know, Rick, it's a fair question. The question is, the answer is, what kind of shape's the rest of the vehicle in? All right. It sounds like the trans is headed for replacement. You know, you can go through the change the fluid and check the fluid level and pull the pan and look at all the other things. But it's an 03. It's 18 years old. It's got almost 90,000 miles on it. I'm guessing it's not really been serviced great. But before you go through the expense of replacing the trans, and that'll set you back, you know, $3,500, I'm sure, $4,000, depending upon where it's done and to what level of quality. And make sure you ask about warranties when you invest in something like another transmission for a vehicle. What does the rest of the vehicle look like? You know, and even if it looks good, you know, and I'm talking about, you've got to consider any rusted brake lines. What does the rest of the suspension look like? You know, any rusted dangling hanging parts? What's the body like? You know, there's 100 things that are 100 parts to that question. But more importantly, or just as importantly, what kind of maintenance has the engine gotten? Has it had its oil changes? Had it had, you know, other fluid service? Or has this been a, hey, we'll drive it for 18 years and when something breaks, decide whether or not to fix that one part and try and drive it more, or should we replace it? You gotta look at the whole package, and then you can make an educated decision. I appreciate the question. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Thanks for being here. Till the next time, I'm reminding you, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.